It's a sunny day in May. Armed men enter a Massachusetts museum and steal precious artwork, smash-and-grab style, all in broad daylight. Shockwaves around the world, the New York Times front page headline reads, "Two shoot a museum guard and flee with four paintings." Here is the thing. It is not the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum heist. This robbery actually happened almost two decades before the Gardner crime, May 17, 1972. That afternoon, two masked intruders entered the Worcester Art Museum and stole a Picasso, two Gauguins, a priceless piece believed to be by Rembrandt, thought to be valued actually not priceless, but in the seven-figure range. At the time, it was the second largest post-World War II museum robbery in the world, and the first known to use a gun. When the thieves entered the museum, four teenagers, Beth Ellen Crotty, Kathy Cardiganer, Beth Silver, and Jerry Furman were also there. The two Beths and Kathy were completing an art homework assignment. Jerry had the wheels, tagging along in her mother's yellow Skylark convertible. In a twist of fate, each would come face to face with the robbers on that day and their 22. This year marks 50 years since the heist. Those women are still friends. Their story from that day went untold until this May, when Worcester's Telegram and Gazette tracked them down. And we were intrigued, so we invited all four of them to join us recently. Tell us that story firsthand. We started by asking Jerry Furman to set the scene for us.
It was like a typical day in our lives. We were together, we were having a great time, and we loved going to the art museum.
And Kathy, had you been to the museum any number of times before, or was this a first?
Yeah. No, not a first at all. It was our museum. You know, the way I think people feel in Worcester, it's a special museum. And I mean, I was just probably happy I had finally finished and picked a painting and had finished my notes.
Okay, so we get to the museum. Now, what listeners don't know yet is that you had this experience in pairs. So when the robbery goes down, Kathy and Beth Crotty are still in the museum. Beth Silver is done and has gone back out to the car with Jerry. So Jerry and Beth Silver, you guys are now sitting outside in the May sun in the Skylark convertible chilling. Is that right?
Yes.
Beth Silver, do you remember what painting it was?
I remember the artist, but unfortunately not the painting. It was Pierre Bonnard.
Kathy, how about you? Do you remember the painting you were studying?
Yes, it was the big, big, giant shipwreck.
And how about you, Beth Crotty?
I actually have no idea which one. I have no memory of it. I think all the other excitement took precedence.
So let's talk about that excitement a little bit. So I'm gonna talk now to Kathy and Beth Crotty because we're going to start in the museum. Who was the first person to have some idea that something was amiss? And how did you know?
Well, first, may I apologize to my dear friend. It was me. And
this is Kathy, right?
Yes, this is Kathy. I was done. I was finished. And I was kind of walking out into the hallway and saw a very bizarre thing, which was a man scooting across the doorway of an opposite room. And it looked really cool. What is that? And so adventurous as we were and naive, i.e. stupid, I was intrigued, and I had to tell Beth about it, Beth Crotty.
So you thought he was intriguing, or was he carrying something?
Well, what is going on? There's a man, he's got a bag, he's running across the room. Come here, come look at this.
So you, Beth Crotty, are like, okay, and you head on over, right?
Well, I actually thought that she said something different from what she did say. The art museum has a school connected to it, and I thought she said, there's a painted man. During then, those years was when people would paint their bodies in sort of pop art fashion and things. So that's what I thought she was talking about. So I went running right after her to go see this person who was covered with a painting, basically.
But it wasn't, Kathy. And it was something much more nefarious. What happens next, Kathy?
One of them turns to us and orders us to sit down, and he's wearing a ski mask.
So what possesses you, Beth Crotty, when somebody in a ski mask says, sit down? And I don't mean this judgmentally, because I probably would too, but what's going through your head that makes you kind of obey in that moment?
He sounded like he meant it, like we should do what he said and did sit down.
Wait, Kathy, did you say he had a gun?
Just the gun.
So he brandished the gun when he told you to sit down?
Yes, he did.
What ran through your head when you were on a high school trip to the art museum and all of a sudden you're staring at the barrel of a gun?
I remember it was scary, but I don't remember feeling like he was going to use the gun in any way. It was more like we were pesky girls who got in the way.
I feel like that too. The reality of the gun itself, the only time it really affected me was that I saw his hand shaking a little bit. And he had the ski mask on, and it was more weird that he chose to sit on a museum piece across from us than the reality that we could actually be shot. But I was shaking. I was shaking too, and I knew I had to like be still. And I put my head down like this. We can't see you. And I said that to him.
You wanted to make sure that they didn't think you'd later be able to identify them?
Right.
So meanwhile, outside, we have Beth Silver and Jerry. And when does this crisis enter your world, the two of you? Jerry.
Well, first I have to say, so we're sitting out in the car waiting for Beth and Kathy to come. And you get a little bored when you're 17 and sitting and waiting. So we drove around what was then a circular driveway of the art museum. And in doing so, in coming back into the entrance, we inadvertently blocked the getaway car. So while we're sitting there, all of a sudden, two men come running out of the art museum and they're carrying bags that clearly had paintings in them and they had on ski masks, threw them in the car, and one came to the open window and put a gun in the window and said, "Move."
Jerry has a much clearer memory of all that than I do. I have to add, what I remember first is the gunshot.
Let me just pause you there and just note. There was an unarmed security guard at the entrance of the museum, and the person carrying the gun eventually shot that security guard in the side. He did live. He was okay. But you heard that gunshot, Beth Silver.
Yes. He fell out of the doorway onto kind of the top level of the stairway. There's another part of this story that is about me telling Jerry, "Duck," and pulling her down. Maybe we haven't gotten to that yet, but we too were concerned about them not being able to identify us. I think we had seen a lot of cop and robber TV shows.
So I was moving back, and as I pulled the car to the side of the road, the getaway car went by us. The driver had taken off his mask and looked at us, and that you were closest because I'd pulled over to the left, and you grabbed me and pulled me down and said, "Duck." And that's when I got scared and mostly frightened then for Beth and Kathy.
So the four of you reunite that day in the museum. And what do you say to each other? Are you checking each other out for safety and security? Are you saying, "Can you believe that happened?" You know, what's happening when the four of you find each other again?
I think we hugged. I can't imagine. I think we just hugged each other and said, "Are you okay?"
So with that in mind, what Jerry just said, I do want to ask you, were you okay?
I really was. I was totally fine. It seems to me that after the robbers left, we were very quickly escorted to the back office of the museum where the director was, and then the FBI were there, and they had us look at mugshots. And of course, Kathy and I couldn't identify anybody, at least because we never saw them without their masks on. But there were newspaper reporters came very quickly. The word got out very quickly.
Because I'd left my car kind of in the middle of the road, they let me go out to move it. There were a lot of reporters and photographers, and a police officer came running over and grabbed me. And so I remember him like hugging me to his chest and saying, "Please don't publish anything. You know, this would put her life at risk." And no one, well, I was quoted in some papers at the time, no one put a photo in.
What about parents, family, were they pretty freaked out?
I asked my 92-year-old mother, my now 92-year-old mother, owner of the Skylark, what it was like for her, because we were excited. And she said she was terrified. Yeah. I had no memory of that.
I think too, this is Beth Crotty, that we were excited to go to school the next day to tell our art teacher what happened.
How did your art teacher react? I am curious. What does a teacher say when you say, "I went to do my homework yesterday and got held at gunpoint"?
I think she was shocked. She just was shocked.
I think we got extra credit.
All right, so Beth Silver, we're going to come forward to today. Of course, it's a joy. I'm talking to all four of you. You all stayed in each other's lives. That's not typical for high school friends, is it?
No, I often hear that it is not typical.
And Beth, do you feel like this shared experience fastened your friendship?
I don't know that it had that much to do with it. I think there was more to our friendship than just the art museum robbery. It's a wonderful story. I mean, you know, it, as long as no one did get seriously hurt, it has become a wonderful story to remember and, you know, retell. But I think there was more to our bond than this, really.
Does everyone else agree?
Yes, we've been friends for a long, long time by the time we hit high school. We've known each other. So the bond was already there.
That is Jerry Furman, Kathy Cardigener, Beth Crotty, and Beth Silver, four lifelong friends who got caught up in the second largest art heist in state history. Amazing story. Thanks to all four of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Anthony Amore is here with us in Studio 2. Amore is the Director of Security and Chief Investigator at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. He's also author of several books, including Stealing Rembrandts, The Untold Stories of Notorious Art Heists, which includes the Worcester Heist. He's also currently a candidate for state auditor. Anthony, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Any surprises or new twists in what you just heard from the four of them?
No, because I had the pleasure to speak to one or two of them in the past, and they're really nice, pleasant women and fun to talk to. The thing that surprises me is I'm sitting here listening with you, and it brings a smile to your face hearing the story, but then you have to remember this was a violent crime. It was a scary thing that happened. You know, it's one of the weird paradoxes of art crime where people find it entertaining, but at the root of it, there's violence.
And this was a really big deal at the time, right?
Absolutely. I mean, a guard was shot. This is the first time someone used a gun to rob a museum.
Which also blows my mind. 1972, right. And it's the first time someone has used a gun to rob a museum.
Right. And the architect of this crime, Al Mundy, is very proud of being that innovator. He was on the old Keith Olbermann show one time talking about how he's the person who came up with this technique. But I think you would agree that that's not so creative.
Yeah, I'm not going to call that innovation.
Right. Yeah. Using a gun to rob something is not particularly ingenious. But I think to myself, I don't know if you've been to the Worcester Art Museum, but you're in the Renaissance Court is where this crime happened. And it's very large, it's cavernous, and it's marble and it's cement. And I don't know if you've ever heard a gunshot without earphones on, ear protection. It is frightening and penetrating. And imagine that in this hall. It had to be terrifying. Then you see this poor guard has been shot. He's an elderly gentleman. He's on the floor. He's bleeding badly. Thankfully, the person he was speaking to at that moment before he encountered these thieves was a nurse who administered first aid to him and probably saved his life. So it's a violent crime at its root. Massachusetts, Gardner Museum aside, Massachusetts is the home of enormous art crime. And when you mentioned this was the second largest, my mind started spinning, saying, well, you know, that's debatable because the MFA was robbed. A gun was used 3 years later after the Worcester Art Museum. There was a major home, a theft from a home in Stockbridge. It's the biggest theft from a home in American history, and it was paintings, $50 million worth. So things like this happen here in Massachusetts on a big scale, not just the Gardner.
Why, Anthony? What's the confluence that creates those conditions here?
I think that my research tells me that,
That's fine.
That in that era, especially leading up to around 1990 when the Gardner heist happened, there were a lot of criminal organized gangs. It was almost like the Wild West here. The amount of crime that was happening, art aside, was enormous. So all of these places, I often say the last place to be robbed of its Rembrandts was the Gardner Museum, not the first. There was a home in Cohasset that had a Rembrandt stolen from it, Rembrandt etching stolen from the Harvard Art Museum. The biggest coin theft in American history happened at Harvard. These things happened here because crime was so prevalent in Massachusetts at the time.
So there are a couple of things that are interesting about this that I want to pull out. I'm actually a little distracted from it by I didn't realize how much theft had been happening. When I heard about this story, I thought, well, why didn't I know about this story? And then I assumed I didn't because I know about Gardner, because everybody knows. Right. Is that fair?
I think it's fair. I mean, this is 50 years ago. I give you credit for recognizing that the 50th anniversary just happened. So, yeah, I think it's fair. The enormity of the Gardner theft soaks up all the attention. But I do try to remind people that massive art heist have happened here in Boston before the Gardner. And that fact runs contrary to the myth that the Gardner was robbed because of its notoriously bad security. In fact, it was the last place to be robbed, not the first.
Interesting. So two other things in that. One, there is a difference in outcome here. Mm-hmm. We haven't told our listeners this yet. Right. But this one didn't succeed in the end, the Worcester Art Museum.
None of them really succeed. So success depends on your definition of it. So when people steal these things, almost every time, except the one outlier, also a Massachusetts person, Miles Connor, their motive is money. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I can't think of an art theft in Massachusetts that resulted in somebody profiting. And I don't believe anybody profited from the Gardner theft.
Because they wouldn't be able to sell the artwork.
You can't sell these masterpieces. And these are the lessons you learn. And this is what Al Mundy learned. When he orchestrated this theft, there were no buyers. So it didn't succeed in the sense that 4 weeks after the Worcester art heist, the paintings were returned. But, you know, again, success from the theft perspective, from the thieves' perspective, is to profit from it, and they really don't.
Ultimately, all of the people involved in this particular heist, the Worcester Art Museum heist, were convicted?
Yes. Al Mundy fled to Montreal and was part of crimes in Montreal using an alias, but they tracked him down. He was brought back and sentenced to, I believe it was 9 years, at the old Bridgewater State Hospital. And he got out early because while he was there, he helped save somebody's life. So they wound up cutting his sentence.
Anthony, what has changed in museum security as a result of the Worcester heist and, as you tell me, a number of robberies since then?
So much has in terms of technology and also philosophy. Back in, say, 1970 and after, when you would set up security at a museum, you would basically have one layer of security. Now the philosophy is to put what's precious at the center, in this case the collection, and build concentric circles of security around them so that there's no 100% security, but what you do is inhibit the possibility of one failure leading to catastrophe. So when you have these multiple layers of security, people have to be very lucky to beat all of them. But as Worcester showed and as the theft at the MFA showed 3 years later, these things usually happen when the museums are open.
Interesting. And of course, we always assume it's at night, it's in the dark, yep. And people are, but you just walk in.
Sure. So you picture, you're exactly right. You picture a cat burglar rappelling through the skylight, right? But why would you rob a museum at night when all of the, you know, it's locked down, all of the bells and whistles are on? It's not to say it doesn't happen, but the majority happen in smash and grabs, because if you do it when the museum's open, you're now 50% of the way there.
Interesting.
So the challenge for someone like me is to make sure that the path out is very difficult, and that's where security is now, slowing people down in and out.
So, okay, in our last 30 seconds or so, you've studied so much of this, and you are in charge of security at an art museum. Mm-hmm. So what is sort of your philosophy that has emerged from studying all of these thefts?
Well, it's that there's no 100% security, but as I was mentioning, you have to use all the tools you can to prevent a quick heist. You have to make sure you have multiple layers so that even one or two failures doesn't result in a loss. And at the heart of it, though, the most important thing you can do as security director is make sure that you're not ruining the experience of the visitor, because these thefts happen often, but at individual institutions, rarely. So you want to make sure you're not ruining that experience between the viewer and the artwork.
Anthony Amore is Director of Security and Chief Investigator at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. He's also the author of several books, including Stealing Rembrandts, The Untold Stories of Notorious Art Heists, and currently a candidate for state auditor. Learned a ton. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Appreciate you coming in.
My pleasure.